gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good, then. Well, then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine.
It's a podcast.
Hello and welcome to Fighting in the War Room, episode 122, the review segment for Friday, June 10th, 2016. Oh my God, guys, Warcraft. I saw this movie. I played the game, as we talked about earlier this week, and then I saw the fucking
movie. You're all in on Warcraft.
I saw the trailer for this before Star Wars and could not have come up with a movie that was less up my alley.
My mom, I've told this story before, and I will tell it again. I took my mom to see Star Wars over Christmas, and this is a woman who, this was very out of character for her. She leaned over to me after the Warcraft trailer and said, "That's an abomination." And she was right.
This is the woman who raised you.
It is.
So Warcraft, Warcraft is based on a video game, but not just a video game, like a video game universe. Like there are books, there are many different versions, there's a mythology. I mean, I know that there is someone listening right now who's just killing themselves because I don't know any of this stuff. But it's not like a video game adaptation like, you know, your average, like, go chase the thing. It's like a whole universe that they're trying to establish. Obviously, it's going for sequels. According to patches, it's already doing so well overseas that there probably will be sequels.
It is called overseas Warcraft The Beginning.
Wow.
And it definitely feels that way. It's really kind of an interestingly structured movie because it feels like the prequel to a movie that doesn't exist yet. I found that kind of compelling, even though there's no story. But the first scene of this movie is like, there's been a long war between orcs and humans.
And now
here's the story
it.
Of why.
And it spends the last 10 minutes and a mid-credits, not even a mid-credits scene. It like has the closing title card and then another scene. It's very bizarre, setting up the next movie. So
This movie is basically all the hot fantasy garbage that makes me not like fantasy stuff. It is a whole bunch of nonsense and talking about magic and portals and powers and people standing and saying, this thing is powerful because of this and this person is this, and giving you no stakes or actual people you can engage with. I did not like this movie. David, I don't think you like this movie either.
Wait, can we set up what this movie is about?
Yeah.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Well, okay, sure. Go for it. And patches, I promise we will get to you. You will be a worker defender.
No, I'm not. I'm not chiming in. I'm not trying to muscle in a defense here. I'm just saying, let's set up this movie because I am excited to set up this movie.
I don't dare try one of these.
The movie begins with the orcs, which
in their home world of Draenor.
Interesting choice. It goes straight to orcs. It doesn't try to let you farm gold as a human first before bring the orcs into the equation as some sort of invading force.
Which I was heartbroken by with my extensive Warcraft knowledge.
Right.
Can you please describe this movie like you're the dungeon master and give a little like fantasy verve to your speech?
Well, in my review of the film, I said that it was like a dungeon master narrating an episode of Drunk History.
That's why it's a blast.
how them watching the movie, which is just bone-jarringly incoherent, feels. But we
pick up with Goldar.
So there is. I could never tell the orcs in the movie apart ever, and that includes the main character.
That's funny.
The main character has his tooth pierced. That was my
main.
There are only like three main orcs. One is the main character Durotan, who you know has the full set of hair, the big tusks. Then his friend is bald. That makes him very clearly a different orc. And then the other main orc, Goldan, the bad wizard orc, is green and
Goldan.
Old.
He's got an apostrophe in his name, and I need Goldan. To hear it when you say it.
Goldan.
He is so there, and there are also two strains of orc, at least, that we see. The brown orcs and the green orcs. There are some racial politics in the orc community that go.
I leaned over to Patches halfway through this and asked, why are some of them green and some of them orange?
And then I leaned back to her and said, why are some people white and some people black, Katie?
But then two orange orcs had a green orc.
And well, don't even get me started. Wait, hold on. Let's roll it back.
Welcome to real life in 2016 where anything's possible.
So there are orcs, and they are – we meet the orcs through an orc couple who, to the film's ostensible credit, have – what appears to be like a genuine relationship. It's not like we meet the orcs through battle. There's like a tender I want to say human, but that seems incorrect in this moment. It was a tender moment between them.
Authentic, right. Thoughtful moment.
Sure, sure, sure. So the arcs here are Durotan, played by Toby Kebbell.
The chieftain of the Frostwolf clan.
I don't even. Draka.
Oh my god.
His orc pregnant wife. And they have their shitty CG hands that they hold, and it looks fucking awful in 3D. And this is some of the worst 3D I've ever seen. The glasses.
What?
If they move even a hair of an inch, and the whole picture goes out of focus.
Yeah, I had that problem too. I had like a glare inside.
Now that's definitely true, but this is not bad 3D
anyway,
by any
so
means. I thought this was kind
of terrible
3D.
Wait, you couldn't see anything through your fucking glasses.
Yes, I could. What do you mean?
Okay.
I'm not like
not.
Looking side by side.
And yeah. I will stress to anyone who wears glasses to begin with, for which 3D is ordinarily a challenge. I wear glasses. Patches does not. That this was a particular hurdle. And I've seen many, many 3D movies under duress. And this was one of the worst experiences I've had. Anyway, they have these two orcs. Their evil orc wizard, who is like the Trump of the orc world. I mean, he is so flagrantly evil that it's hard to imagine.
People love it when you bring politics into this show.
I know, but that's really the most obvious parallel. And also, fucking deal with it. It's 2016. We're 5 months away from potentially electing a madman into the most powerful office in the land. Get used to it. So his name is Gul'dan. He's pure evil.
I love that he's pure evil too. I love that there's no like, I'm not going to work in the shadows here. I'm going to suck the souls out of people. And if my own allies don't like it, I'll suck their souls out too. I'm horrible.
Right. But most of his horde doesn't seem to realize the orcs are ostensibly not so smart. They are strong and the humans are smart. What's interesting about that is that the humans are all deeply fucking brain damaged. And so the orcs seem oftentimes.
I don't think
the
orcs are played as stupid.
Smarter.
I think they're played as driven. I think they're played as we've just decimated our homeland and we need to get people out.
Played
they're
as stupid. They're I mean, one of the first things we see a human say, and perhaps they're wrong about this, is that the humans are smart and the orcs are strong. And then, of course, an orc picks up the human who says that and flings him across the room because he snuck up on them. But I think that is sort of the brute power versus strategery that they set up. And the dynamic, like almost anything else in this movie, doesn't make any sense. But they Gul'dan wants to – his magic – and there's a bit of an environmentalist streak here. His magic has drained all of their worlds dry wherever they go.
His magic has a name.
It's called The Fell, and God help you if you missed that description the first time around like I did and spent the next 2 hours going, what the fuck is The Fell?
I definitely did and definitely didn't know what The Fell was.
Yeah, thank you for nothing,
was.
Duncan
There are
Jones.
Context clues.
But then he opens a portal to the human world, and they're going to bring in the horde, the invading army, really, of which both the extremely pregnant Draka and her husband are our members, husband, partner, whatever, warrior, mate. And so they go through. She gives birth instantly. Katie, I'm sorry to say that from what I've seen, human birth is not as quick and painless as orc birth.
Yeah, holy crap. That went really fast. I was thinking that baby was going to die. And I was
she
like, wow.
She farted out that
baby. I've gone to see this movie where this kid is going to die right away. So
secret,
at least that didn't happen.
The secret to painless childbirth is transport yourself through an interdimensional gateway. It slips right out.
It is. So, they arrive in the human world. The humans are like, oh shit.
The human world has a name, David. It's called Azeroth.
Nope. And so they fight. And so there's all this crazy shit happening in the human world. None of it makes a lick of sense. it's really hard to describe just how little character there is to these characters. And how poorly developed they are. The important ones you have to keep track of are, who's the main guy? Travis Fimmel.
Sir Anduin Lothar.
Oh, Lothar.
Military
Travis
commander.
Fimmel is his real name. He is like, he's kind of the Ned Stark of this world.
He looks a little like Ned Stark.
He has like the cut-rate Aragorn, you know, he's the human guy who looks kind of normal and like it doesn't really matter what he does, but he's the hero, ostensibly. and then there
he
is,
has more of a Nordic accent. Is that where that guy is from? Is he, where is
he's
he?
Australian.
Well, he's on Vikings, if that helps. And then there's the king and queen, who are played by the same two actors who play a former couple slash romantic interest in Preacher.
I thought that can't
that
be a coincidence,
bizarre.
Right? That's Dominic Cooper and Ruth Negga, by the way.
Yeah, and Ruth Negga is extremely watchable. And every time she came on screen, I was just like, this is the only thing I want to look at during this movie.
There's an amazing scene with her and Paula Patton, but we will get there. We
her
definitely
eyes
have to discuss
are
that
extraordinary
moment.
In this movie. The makeup, the job they do on her is really interesting. I was like, this movie is nothing but a weird-ass ad for Loving, which I look forward to seeing her in later this year. Anyway.
Ad for Preacher.
Yeah, so they are... No, Preacher I'm done with. Awful. So they are king and queen, and then there's a little squire, like wizardy type apprentice, who is played by the guy who is great in the forthcoming Goat. His name is Ben Schnetzer, and he gets mixed up in some business. They're like, the orcs are coming. What are we going to do? We got to go to the reclusive wizard Medivh, who is played in one of, like, what's the performance that I want to compare Ben Foster as Medivh to? It is this year's Eddie Redmayne in
He's
Jupiter
kind of
Ascending.
Like Jesus, it might be.
Jesus was a much better actor. Then much more restrained.
I think this is less fun than Eddie Redmayne in Jupiter Ascending.
Oh, definitely.
But he's less fun than like a fucking
Ben Foster's. No one's over the top like Eddie Redmayne in Jupiter Ascending, which is a bad thing.
No, like literally, no one in the history of acting has been as.
Yeah, no, it's a negative in this case. You wish someone could go all extreme like that, but Ben Foster is mostly reserved. But the cool thing about this movie is how he still has an American accent, while the guy playing Lothar has like a Nordic accent and other people have British accents.
That is the cool thing about this movie. That is all you get. So Ben Foster is like dealing with some PTSD or some demons. It's unclear.
No, he's been infected.
Yeah, but whatever. I don't want to.
I think we should.
Can I
just state before you go on? Let's just talk about spoilers of this movie. I don't think there's anything major, like major twists. No. That happened, but we want to talk spoilers because it's so ridiculous that it would be holding back too much. It would be like keeping the fell inside you and letting your eyes go green.
It's also
also
grow
if you don't
horns
know
out of your
end,
chin
based on the concept of this movie. Then you're not
also if you think that I have any idea what was happening by the end of this movie and could possibly differentiate between what was a spoiler and what wasn't.
I am ready to tell you.
But so a lot of nonsense happens. The humans got to fight the orcs. Inevitably, the orcs, at least our hero orc, realizes that Gul'dan is no good. And so they got to strike a partnership with the humans. I have to say, to my own credit, the way that we are telling this story right now makes it sound as though it has any logic to it whatsoever. But I assure
and
you...
Yeah, these scenes seem to belong together.
I assure you that there is not a single point in this movie where one scene makes sense in conjunction with the one that immediately preceded or follows it. And I'll hand the baton off to Katie and Patches now as far as the general setup is concerned. But my main gripe about Warcraft, besides the fact that it's just like very poor fantasy, is that it's, for a movie as weird and as much of a gamble as this is, it is bad in the most mundane ways that a movie can be bad. It is not even sort of spectacularly fun bad. It is just sloppy, incoherent, boring, dull. The action is poorly choreographed. There is no sense of this world. There's no sense of why you should give a shit about any of these characters who are uglier and uglier, and I don't mean the humans. It's just like the designs of the orcs are just so uninteresting to watch. The CG is atrocious. It's just like a real fucking waste of everyone's time, including, unfortunately, the time of the reasonably promising director, Duncan Jones, who devoted, and this was a passion project for him. It's not like he was swindled into this. And also, we haven't mentioned, and I'm now going to shut up, but I would encourage someone else to mention the single worst part of this movie, which is, of course, Paula Patton as Garona.
Woo! Before I let Patches talk, I do want to agree that I do think its boringness and badness is what makes it such a bummer, and like comparing it to Jupiter Ascending, which is at least fascinating for how insane it is. Like, there's nothing of that. There's none of that spark of like, oh, you're really going for something here. It's boring in the way that like any kind of poorly told, like, in a land of kings story can be, which is why I checked out of it. But Patches, you've kind of found the spark of madness in this, I think.
Yeah, where to begin? Well, this is certainly no Jupiter Ascending, as I mentioned. That is a visionary film. You know, that is eight tons of imagination being dumped on screen at once. I really adore that movie. I hope people look back to that. David, you hated Jupiter Ascending, right?
Less so now that I've seen Warcraft and now you see me too.
It's been
but still real bad. But hey, that had like half dog Channing Tatum flying around Chicago in rocket boots.
Yes,
I was like, this is atrocious, but at least
Queen of the Bees.
It's something that I can like go and talk to Patches about, be like, wasn't that shit crazy?
Hey, I forgot about the bees.
And Warcraft is not as crazy as that, obviously. I did not find it boring. Though, I clearly, compared to you guys, and this is well documented on the podcast, that audacity is the wrong word because this movie is not that crazy, but the pure imagery, pure fantasy, the translation of cartoonery into live action can tickle my fancy. I kept thinking about the game, and I brought it up on the episode earlier this week, just about like how I could find myself playing this video game over and over and over again and looking at the same images and basically enacting the same battles over and over. What was it about Warcraft that really stoked my personal fire? And I guess it's taking the Tolkien imagery. I mean, obviously Warcraft owes everything to Lord of the Rings and pumping it full of, or gamifying it, right? Pumping it, roiding it up when magic can do as much damage as it can, when orcs are muscle-laden and just swing giant axes. And I mean, it's a real flipbook of concept art in a certain way. And I'm not pining for more Warcraft movies after Warcraft, but I certainly got a huge kick out of just seeing these orcs and hearing them talk about the nonsense. And oh my God, now in the first 5 minutes before the Warcraft title even pops up, they're flying through space. Jesus, like what the fuck is this movie doing? What is actually...
I think you're giving the space portal way too much.
Yeah, and I think there's also, there is a certain, and I do not, despite how it may sound, mean this is a slag against Patches, but there is a certain strain of people that we know who really get off on seeing, and I am using a Patchism here, nerd ass shit.
I was not gonna say that.
There are people, you know, who respond to I don't know, the Green Lantern or Thor 2 or this just because they're seeing hilarious nerd ass shit on screen. Now if that describes you, that's perfectly valid, and perhaps you will find more to enjoy here than Katie or I did.
And
but if it doesn't, be forewarned.
I certainly got a kick out of that because there's something to... I mean, the imagery is spectacular. The way that they're pulling off the orcs and ILM is realizing the details in their face. I mean, I really could just watch Durotan and his buddies shoot the shit about like hunting blood hogs in the fields of Galhul or whatever the fuck they're talking about. And it's really funny.
Guardians of Galhul.
I
really hope this is a Guardians of Galhul crossover.
There's a lot of moments where these guys are just sitting around kind of chatting about their lives, and it's mundane and it doesn't go anywhere because whatever they're talking about doesn't matter. But just seeing them talk, it brings me so close into these fantasy creatures that it's kind of astounding. You get to marvel at the effects work, and obviously, if the characters aren't there for you, then you'll give up on this movie pretty quickly. But if you can bask in the grandeur of what they've realized here, I think there's something to that. And I think there's also something, Katie, you and I were discussing Pacific Rim after this movie, a complete mess, failure of a movie for me.
Yes.
And I think everyone here.
Yeah, I do not like Pacific Rim.
Why does Pacific Rim fail so hard? Because it's giant robots. It's a fully realized world, but it's all in the dark. It's all muddy. It's all rainy. The story really doesn't make sense. And the battles are just over and over and over again. It's the exact same thing for 2 hours. Bigger monsters, more vehicles. I don't know. It was a repeated idea from minute one and in the ugliest possible way. Here, at least with Warcraft, we get to see these incredible creatures, this production design with this armor, just like, again, roided up Tolkienisms in bright daylight, like seeing griffins fly around and watching magic electricity shoot into the sky. And you get to see it in broad daylight.
You're compliment to this movie relative to at least Pacific Rim is that they turned up the brightness setting.
Yeah, I think you're giving it way more.
But I'm also going to give
place in daylight.
Well, I'm also going to give Duncan Jones credit. I do think the action choreography is pretty stellar, and you get to see, like, this could have been a mess of digital orcs, but I found the battles to be well coordinated so that you can be impressed by the strength of these guys. Or when the humans start figuring out how to fight the orcs, these sly maneuvers with their swords, like the battles they have are cool. And then when magic interjects, I mean, these are eye-popping moments. I don't know why you guys thought this was really clumsy. Certainly compared to something like another movie that Katie and I were discussing, Batman v Superman, just muddy, the geography is all over the place. Like, this is well-constructed action.
But at least
I think it loses
Superman.
A lot of people with the fantasy vocabulary. I think that's a huge... I mean, I have listened to many people talk about how they cannot watch anything with guys with swords riding on horses. Like, that's the end of the story for a lot of people. And this is going all in on this concept and this the vernacular of made-up names and made-up places and made-up black cubes that float in sky castles and shit. Like, this is going deep on the stuff that is next level, even for the people who play this video game.
Nerd ass shit.
You said it again.
When you talk about the humans figuring out how to fight the orcs, though, or like maneuvers, like I didn't see any of that. Like, I didn't see any like development or goals progress or like any like story or who to follow. Like, we have a main character, and Patches, when we were leaving the screen, I asked you to describe him, and you could not come up with a single adjective other than that he
what do you mean?
One-liners.
No,
well,
Katie,
he is. They're all stock characters, but I actually dig the performances too. Like, I think Travis Fimmel is pretty funny and sly, and they do this weird thing with the humans where it feels almost like they are contemporary characters. Obviously, when we see fantasy characters, we think, oh, you're in some sort of medieval time place. You're not adhering to our logic, and yet they speak kind of like they're in 2016. They have rapport, comedic rapport, and kind of one-liner logic that would play if it was taking place in our world 2016, which I think is very funny and a way of kind of grounding its most outlandish ideas. And I think Travis Fimmel and this other guy, Ben Schnetzer, who plays Khadgar, the young mage, they have a really funny buddy thing going on, even if they don't get a lot of time to establish it. It just makes these character moments that they need to have to push the plot forward and like get to the next battle or get to the next crazy display of magic. They're not interstitial moments. They're funny.
They're fine.
I will have to really just agree with Katie and everything she said. That, like, that is, I think how she said it really gets to the heart of what made me so disinterested in this movie. That, like, I couldn't tell you. I watched with my eyes open, you know, the whole time. I could not tell you anything about any of these people. Certainly the orc characters or the action. I mean, you're talking about the action, at least in Batman versus Superman, which is a film I resent you for putting me in a position where I have to defend. I knew at least that Batman was fighting Superman. Here, they're in all of what are allegedly the major action beats. I could not tell you what character was fighting another character. And more importantly, I couldn't tell you why. And in the rare moments where I did have that basic information, like in the scene where the guy, I think it's the human guy's son is killed.
How is that? Like, that's so straightforward.
That's like the one moment where I knew what was happening. I was so turned off by how fucking stupid the lightning field around them looked.
See, that's the big thing. You just think it's stupid that it's happening. I think that the big problem for people with this movie is that it's a huge ask in the logic department.
No, but the first thing I said about this movie was that the ways in which it's boring and the ways in which it's bad are unspectacular. It has nothing to do with fantasy. And I tend to like a lot of fantasy movies and the Lord of the Rings films. The Lord of the Rings films are my favorite movies.
What else?
And how many other fantasy movies are there? I love fucking Krull. I have a soft spot for Willow. What else is there? I don't know. Anything that takes place in that milieu. I do not find... I know what I'm biased against, or like not biased against, but what modes of filmmaking I tend not to respond to. And I do not sit down for a fantasy movie expecting to be turned off by how silly it is. Some of the YA stuff recently, maybe, but the fantasy world I find myself receptive to in general. And I just thought that, like, yeah, there are ways to do this. I mean, like, look, I just think of, like, the Gareth Edwards Godzilla. I mean, like, I know that's sort of a joke now in when I bring it up, but that should be silly. I mean, that's a movie about a 300-foot monster stomping around San Francisco, but there's a certain...
But it's not trying to be silly, and this movie is trying to be silly.
Yeah, I know. Right? Maybe
is
not a great example.
Is this movie trying to be silly?
No, yes, I mean, the absolutely. Movie is stone-faced. I mean, it may... Like, this movie has not much of a sense of humor, and...
What?
It does not. You may be laughing at it, but this
no,
is not...
No, but it's inherent to the,
I mean, it's doing,
to the
like,
visual
jokes,
style.
But I don't think that... I don't think the visual style is trying to be funny at all.
You don't think when fucking Gul'dan shoots like green plasma out of his face and opens the gate of time, you don't think that is supposed to be like we're laughing at the audacity of this moment?
No, it is
not at all. And this movie is
it's very self-aware.
There are jokes in the movie, and. Self-aware, maybe the people who were making it were aware, but it does not translate. I mean, this is a dour film for the most part, and I don't think that, you know, when the drama slides off the rails as completely and as quickly as it does, I think there is a bit of a tonal divide that doesn't really play. But,
A dour film are the Michael Bay Transformers movies. That is dour. That's taking a kiddie concept.
That might be worse in some respects than that they do try to be funny and come
it's
up
giving,
short.
Yeah, Michael Bay gives kiddie concepts a swirly and a dirty toilet.
But
this is very self-aware.
I don't think that I was inherently turned off by the idea of what the movie was. It's just how it is about it. It's an incompetently put together film. Like, I was just so fucking bored and uninterested in anything that was happening. I could not wait for it to be over. It felt like a staggering failure. And because of it's so bad on a basic... Wait, hold on. Let me get this thought out. Because it's... Oh, that's a good point. But because it's so bad on a basic level, it made me sort of pay attention to the ways it was bad on an aesthetic level and how it sort of exacerbated my poor reaction to the designs, to the orc designs. No, and that's not really relevant. I think, as someone pointed out almost instantly when you tweeted about this to me,
I don't think
that like
a great commercial.
pointing out another movie's flaws,
I will be pointing out another movie's flaws, but it is relevant because they're both fantasy films and one is trying to be extreme and rip from Tolkien. But it can't figure out how to kind of nurture its intensity and its outlandishness. It spins in circles. It can't even figure out a quest for it to go on. I don't see how that comparison isn't fair.
Well, Paul Patton's character is...
Dismiss my comment here. You haven't seen the movie.
I haven't seen Huntsman. I have nothing to say about it. I don't understand how it's going to add context to talking about this movie.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, you don't know fantasy failure until you've seen Huntsman. I'm telling the audience.
Okay.
I disagree. I've seen both. Huntsman is better. Not good,
Patches,
but better.
Patches, my dear Patches, do you agree with me about Paula Patton?
I don't think she's horrible, no. I mean, I didn't really find anyone to be terrible. I don't think they really figure out how to use her. She's an interesting character on paper because she's, you know, half human, half orc. She's a slave at the beginning of the movie. She automatically becomes their ally for some bizarre reason. It's a huge story misstep that doesn't fit the kind of like laissez-faire attitude towards the rest of the plot. It's almost too much plot for this movie. So I don't think she's bad in it. I just don't think she has a lot to do in it. Does that make sense?
Katie?
Yeah, that's about what I would say. She spends a lot of time scowling, which is a shame.
How can you not scowl? You have those two, like, baby
tusks. I mean, she doesn't seem as actively embarrassed as I was expecting. I think that's the best I can
Katie,
say.
Katie, you and I seem to have had the same sort of understanding of, or lack thereof, of
so
a lot of the plot details.
I can't agree with you?
No. I was just going to say, did you... I spent a lot of this movie assuming, based on the information that the movie gave me, that she was half human and half orc.
But I don't think they ever said that, did they?
No, they didn't.
They call her a hybrid in the beginning.
Was that what you thought as well, or did you...
Yes.
Okay, because I was torn to shreds for saying something like that in my review, although I did research, I dove into the Warcraft wiki worlds while writing my review and found that even in the hardcore Warcraft community, there is a lot of controversy about her lineage, but I thought this was sort of... Yeah, I thought it was sort of endemic of the film's narrative failures at a very basic level that I, not being well-versed in the Warcraft lore and seeing down for it, was so profoundly confused as to her lineage and
but
what
why do you need to know
where
exactly
came.
Where she comes from?
Because
you just
the whole
know that
idea
she's
is that
ostracized.
She's supposed to be a character that's sort of caught between two worlds. And
do they call her a half breed at one point?
Yes,
they do. And but they're also talking about the incompatibility of orcs and humans. And I'm like, oh, but did an orc and human have sex to produce her? And what's the mechanics of that? And like, it just felt symptomatic to me of a world that was not at all built. And her performance, I think, is just stupendously bad. And it does not do her any favors that it comes on the heels of her performance in the do-over. I just think that is a sore spot in a movie that is made up of nothing but sore spots.
I don't
spots.
Think she really stood out as a negative. I think the part is a little undercooked.
Well, I don't. I will say in Patton's defense that I don't think there are many or any actresses that could have saved that role.
What's
I think that her greatest flaw, her greatest downfall here was accepting it.
What's interesting is there's a scene in the movie that, you know, Duncan Jones is an internet guy. He's on Twitter. He's aware of everything that we talk about. And there is a scene planted in the middle of this movie that is so clearly serving the Bechdel test debate that both Katie and I turned to each other during the movie to point it out, and we said it in unison. Like, there's a scene where Paula Patton's Garona is imprisoned, and Ruth Negga's character comes up to her and talks to her about like swords and shit. And it sticks out like a sore thumb. I'd never experienced something in a movie like that felt so like served on a silver platter. Here's the answer to your Bechdel question, or am I making that up?
Wait, are you making it up that it answers the Bechdel question?
Yeah, or
I think he's asking like, did he make it up that it felt like it was inserted just to
for
the Bechdel
that?
Question?
I mean, sure. Like, I don't know why anyone would bother, you know, spending whatever $100,000 that scene cost to film to just answer the Bechdel question, because who gives a shit? But you know, it's there. It doesn't make either of those characters valuable or interesting.
Although it comes into play at the end.
Does it?
The whole knife bit.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But like, know. Yeah.
But Katie, in a week from now, I saw this movie a week ago. Patches and Katie saw it tonight. Katie, a week from now, if someone said the knife bit, I'd be very interested to know if you had any idea what they were talking about. Because I do not know what you guys are referring to.
It's the
right
grand
now.
Finale.
That silly knife that they. Oh yeah.
As I said after the movie, I remember thinking Mamma Mia was the most embarrassing role Dominic Cooper would ever play, and it would hurt his career. But he's in Warcraft, so.
I can't believe you guys had such a hard time following this movie. There's not much to follow. There's a lot of jargon.
Katie and I are old. Katie is 32.
I know.
I'm 31. You're just 30.
Yeah. I'm more like Khadgar, the young mage who defied his organization and went rogue and just started using magic powers and went to flying castle and went inside of that black cube where he met Albert Nobbs and
that was Albert Nobbs.
We think it was Glenn Close.
No, it's 100% definitely.
It's like you so can't wrap your mind around the fact that it's Glenn Close that you just refuse to accept it.
Now, David, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
As someone of the Jewish faith. Do you
find golem? The golem?
Well, no. So there's multiple things here. So this is when it really started to dawn on me. There's a whole MacGuffin in the movie called the Alodai, which is this black cube that Glenn Close is communicating to the mage character using. Or maybe she is Alodai. That's not very clear to me. But Alodai is a thing. Now, when I heard it, I kept thinking they were saying Adonai, like the Hebrew prayer.
I did not make that connection.
Now, as you mentioned, there's a golem.
Adonai is a Jewish Hebrew would be the correct thing to say.
Sorry, Hebrew.
Word for God.
Or Jew. Didn't I say Jewish prayer?
You said prayer. It's a word for God. It's
okay.
Like, yeah.
Okay. And well, yeah. Okay. That's good. It's the word for God. So that's even more applicable. So then there's the golem. Then, of course, there's the exodus of the orcs leaving their land and coming somewhere else. And then, of course, the big on the nose. The baby floats down the river at the end.
In a basket.
Patches is right on the money. There is a strong Old Testament vibe.
What is going on?
Jews, my people cannot claim ownership over. We may have the OG Exodus, but I think Exodus as a concept now, particularly with what you're seeing the migration in Europe, the forced migration, is sort of now not our exclusive province, and it hasn't been for a long time. But I do understand what you're saying. I think you're absolutely right on the money that there's an Old Testament feel to this movie. And there is a particularly Jewish flavor to it, sure. The golem that... what's Mordecai? What the fuck is his name? Medivh,
yes.
Has, and you know, it's a Chekhov's golem, a golem that
When we meet Medivh, he is sculpting yeah. this clay golem in his lair, and he comes down not wearing a shirt with a huge beard. He's like some Brooklyn dude in his loft space making art.
So shirtless.
He's so cool. such a hipster.
And yeah, you know the golem's going to come to life. The golem is a figure from Hebrew folklore. It is, you know, there even recently it's been, there's Cavalier in Clay. It features in Snow in August, which was a novel that preyed upon it. That is a figure that still belongs to Jewish folklore. It is used heavily here. What do I make of it? I don't know. I just think it adds credence to what Patches is saying.
Maybe it's supposed to subconsciously draw upon these you know, Old Testament epics from middle of 20th century. I don't know. Yeah. It certainly gets to that for me at certain points.
Oh my God.
Okay, look, I just want to
epic as the Old Testament. That could be your pull quote.
I'm surprised that like big shots of orcs and humans fighting works for me. I'm surprised that the nod to the game where we're like floating over different sections of the map works. I'm surprised at how much it's functioning, and maybe I'm just high.
Yes, you were high on something. this is a terrible, terrible movie, but no. I'm afraid to say. And I almost regret, as I mentioned on this week's main episode, giving this movie an F because I saw a movie this week that I wish I could give an even lower score.
Oh my God.
But Warcraft is not even going to be the worst movie in theaters this week, and it is one of the worst movies of the year without question. So if you have to go to the movies this week, there still is no excuse to see this.
It's terrible. Which I still haven't done.
Go see Wiener, yeah. Go see Wiener or The Lobster or A Bigger Splash if you can find it, or whatever the fuck else is playing. The Fitz.
I heard you like Ninja Turtles.
I vastly prefer Ninja Turtles to this.
Well, that's interesting. I'm kind of looking forward to that. I didn't hate the first Ninja Turtles.
You should. Yeah, I did hate the first Ninja Turtles. I thought this was a huge improvement, the second one.
I did think, almost speaking to this, you know, people as actually going out to see these movies, sometimes we get caught in the bubble. You know, on one hand, I'm recommending Warcraft. I enjoyed it, but I know that this would cost like $14 to go see. Is it worth $40? I don't know, but it's something I thought about during the movie while I'm enjoying all this fluff. The other thing is, if I had a bunch of like 14-year-old boys or 14-year-old girls, hey, you know, whoever's into this shit, fantasy stuff, they would dig this movie. Come on, Warcraft is cartoony. It is really fun. It's all action and it's all spectacle. And it might be slight to you because it's not dramatically coherent.
But
I needed a safe movie.
I don't know why.
Patrick, Katie, what were you going to say?
Why would you watch this movie instead of playing the game if you're into fantasy shit?
Why would you watch this movie instead of, like, I don't know.
Well, because you get to see it with
hanging out with your friends.
You get to hang out with your friends and see Warcraft. I don't know. I was thinking about, you know, summer movies, me growing up, needing to see movies with my buddies. I would see Warcraft. It's
and
a fun
take
movie.
The $20 that it would cost to see.
And it's
this
so much better than
3D.
Transformers. That's all I
and
can. I'm obsessed.
It. Just invest it in something. buy a half of a share of Apple or something.
Okay.
I don't know.
My real recommendation for Warcraft is don't ever see a Transformers movie ever again. Please don't pay for them.
Just think about how I have preciously few free evenings left to myself for the rest of my life, at least until, you know, for the next 18 years, and how I spent one of them seeing Warcraft for you people. And don't make my mistakes.
A world is dying. There's nothing to go back to. Frostwolf clan is totally screwed. Our people to survive, we must settle down here. Cause Draenor's gone. That much is clear. I got a baby to protect. Keep him in a sack. My baby's mama by the name of Drak. And save for us, there's no life but war. There could be our race's torn.
For so many years, our world has been at peace. Now the orcs are coming like a violent disease. Dark forces are upon us as a rival.
Hey Patches, what was this week's lightning round question?
It was in honor of The Conjuring 2. What's the one sequel coming out for the rest of the year that you actually care about? I guess someone probably cares about The Conjuring 2.
Yeah.
But
I want to also clarify that I'm not qualifying Ghostbusters for this. It's not a sequel.
Ghostbusters is not a sequel.
Neither is Suicide Squad. Neither is Fantastic Beasts, which we let David get away with.
Neither is Rogue One.
Neither is Rogue One. So, all of those. But, all right, so, David, what's your answer?
I'm going to go with It's Only a Podcast, who said Independence Day Resurgence. JK, that movie's not real. The Conjuring 2 because of Jump Scare Master James Wan. Let me say this.
Whoa.
I hate jump scares. I will never see The Conjuring 1 or 2. Screw that movie. James Wan, I have no time for you. But I find myself increasingly excited about Independence Day Resurgence. I know that I shouldn't be. I should have learned better. But what can I say? I love the original. The idea of like the kaiju-sized alien rampaging through the airbase. I'm only human. I kind
of
want to see that.
Can anything top the blowing up of the White House or blowing up of the Empire State Building?
Of course not. But I do want to take this opportunity really briefly to piggyback on something that's said in the end of the segment, which is that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, which is now in theaters, directed by a guy named Dave Green with real zip, a real sort of kinetic energy. It feels like a live-action cartoon. I loathed the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie that was part of this current line that came out 2 years ago. I cannot overstate how much of an improvement this was, much to my surprise. It is fun, zippy, it's alive. It's not going to change your life or anything, but especially if you have kids and you take them, even though it's a little bit dark sometimes, I had a shocking amount of fun with it. So that's a sequel. The end.
Batches.
I am going to go with at Jeremy Flowers, Jeremy Flores, who said, Jason Bourne. Because government analysts saying, oh my God, it's Jason Bourne, is the best.
The best.
Why wasn't I cast in that movie? I say that line great.
Who says it in this movie? Who's the Joan Allen this time?
Allen? Felicity Huffman. Not Felicity Huffman. What am I talking about? No, Alicia Vikander.
No, the people in the control room saying, oh my God, it's Jason Bourne.
It's never
Alicia
young.
Vikander.
It's
like is it Tommy Lee Jones?
Tommy Lee Jones is there, but Vikander is there.
I know, but she's with him. She's not the one in the control room saying, oh my God, it's Jason Bourne.
Wait, are you sure? I thought she was. Thought Julia Stiles is with him.
She's
out in
not the.
Field. I guess we'll have to wait and see the movie.
Yes, that's true. Anyway, whoever gets to say, oh my God, it's Jason Bourne wins the summer.
Oh my God, it's Jason Bourne.
I'm going with Almost Film Critic, who said, anyone who doesn't say Star Trek Beyond is someone not to be trusted. It's co-written by Simon Pegg, for crying out loud. I'm fascinated by this answer because I didn't even think about Star Trek Beyond, and I really, like, genuinely love the first Star Trek and think the second one is okay. And I keep forgetting this movie exists, and I don't know that I thought of being co-written by Simon Pegg as a plus. So I'm
still wondering if that is a plus.
Yeah, I don't
know.
What
are his other writing credits? The World's End.
You know why that's going to be... My money is on that being a pretty decent movie compared to all these other franchise movies this summer is because it's sort of the end of the line for that series. And I think that there's just a much lower sense of stakes. And I think they can have fun with it in a way that some of these other movies can't. So
I should mention that Simon Pegg did get a credit writing Shaun of the Dead. So that's a plus. But
that's
he also wrote Paul.
Yep.
And
Run
that
Fat Boy
is
Run.
A disaster.
Maybe him writing this is a negative.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know, but Almost Film Critic, I'm fascinated by your opinion, and we'll see how it turns out. That does it for this week's Fighting in the War Room. We'll be back talking to you next week about something. I don't know. Summer movie season keeps going. I'm still around. I'm going to have a baby eventually, but not yet. You're still stuck with me. David and Patches, where can people find you online?
Yes, I'm on Thrillist mostly every day. At least putting up something for somebody.
Making that content.
Entertainment editor. Yeah, that's true. Hey, but pretty good content, I should say. A lot more editing. Less byline now. More outsourcing. I don't know. Maybe if you're listening to this, you should write for me.
So
anyway, I'm on
work.
Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Mr. Patches.
I'm David Ehrlich. I'm down in the fucking salt mines writing things all day long over at IndieWire. Where I'm a senior film critic. You can find me on Twitter at David Ehrlich, and you can find my controversial review of Warcraft.
Yeah, you should have said you're down in the gold mine, like
the gold
orcs.
Mine. I'm farming for ore, and you can find my controversial review of Warcraft over at, and my review of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 while you're there, at IndieWire.
And I'm Katie Rich. I'm at vanityfair.com, also doing the editing and less of the writing, but you can find my byline Once in a Blue Moon. And on Twitter at Katie Rich, KateyRich, where I'm currently being told that I should consider Swinton as a baby name.
Yeah. Swinton?
Yeah.
Have you considered Adwin Lothar or Medivh or Durotan or Khadgar?
Please, Medivh. Without going through labor, I think I don't have to do that anymore.
How many apostrophes will your child's name have?
Goldan Baltus? Oh my god. That is such a good name.
You'll all have to stay tuned to find out. Or maybe listen to next week's podcast. The answer might be on there. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back talking to you next week.